Thank you to Dina for hosting this year. Thanks to Amy for organizing it. I hope she's going to be able to make it, but because she's had some, it's been overwhelmed the past couple of days. So anyway, I thought it would be a good idea to go over some of the halachos related to Tisha B'Av, and specifically this year, where Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, Motzei Shabbos, and Sunday. There are a lot of different things which come up, which again, not the most. I wouldn't say that there are a lot of details, but the details are important, and it's worthwhile, especially because not everybody always thinks about all the details, to review all the different issues that come up, so that everybody has a good sense of what exactly is going to come their way, bad in every case that are not so clear. So we'll try to review everything, and then if we have extra time, we can try to review some of the regular halachos of Tisha B'Av as well, and at least the halachos of fasting. We'll at least go over those very briefly. The source sheet, I don't know if anybody actually got it, because I just put it up. That is actually not my source sheet. It's actually it's Orlean's source sheet. It's the one that he used for his shir Monday night, because my shir is very, very... No. I just used his. It was okay, so... Oh. I'm not cheating. But he gave a very similar shir Monday night. And it was just all the sources that I would have made anyway were right there. So I just asked him, okay, rather than wasting my own time, can I just use his? He said, yeah, he didn't care. So that's his source sheet, but all the stuff is there. So if you want to look at it, we can look at it. And if not, it'll be pretty easy to follow without it as well. All right. So just to start with the first, oh, okay, let's stop for a second. Okay, now that Amy walked in, so thank you again to Amy for organizing this, and we're dedicating this year for Refuah Shleima for Shaya ben Sara, right, which is your father, who should have a complete Refuah Shleima, should hear only good things. So that's the source sheet that if you have, you can look at it. If not, it would be pretty easy to follow without it. The first point is that the 10th of Av, even though usually we celebrate, hopefully it'll be a celebration, but if Tisha B'Av falls the way that it has for the past 2,000 years, we will commemorate and observe Tisha B'Av usually on the 9th of Av. This year it's on the 10th of Av. Even though it's different than normal, the 10th of Av also has significance in the Gemara. The Gemara actually says, and this is in the Shita, is actually the first source. We're not going to read the whole thing inside, but basically he says that the Gemara says that the burning of the Beis HaMikdash by the enemy, the Babylonians and the Romans, took place at the end of the 9th of Av. If you look at the Gemara has a question that says Har HaBayis HaRishona, the first temple was destroyed. First it says it was on the 5th on the 5th month, the Shiva L'Chodesh, on the 7th of the month, and then it says it was on the Asor L'Chodesh, on the 10th of the month. What's going on? So the Gemara says, "Hakeitzad, but Shiva nichnasu nachar mohecha, on the 7th of Av, that's when the non-Jews, in this case, for the first Beis HaMikdash, was the Babylonians, came into the temple, and they ate achlu kilklubo, they ruined, they damaged lots of things. Shvi v'shmini, in 7th and 8th, the chi sabach l'chashecha, close to sundown on the 9th of Av, hitzisu bo esha'or, then they set the whole thing on fire. Hayadolik meholich kol yom kulo." And then it was, the burning continued throughout not only the night of the 9th, or night of the 10th, but also the entire day of the 10th. Also, the burning continued. And that's why the next line of the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan pointed out, if I was in that generation, he says, Lo kavativ ela basiri. If Yomali ha'isi oso ador, if I lived then, at the time when this happened, Rabbi Yochanan was a little bit later, he says, I would have made Tisha B'Av as Asiri B'Av. Okay, why? Because Mnesha Rubo Shalhechal Bo Nisraf, most of the Beis HaMikdash was burned and destroyed on the 10th of Av. Why did we not do that? So he says, Rabbanan Aschule de Purnus Adifa, the beginning of a bad event is more important in terms of its commemoration. So if it began to be burned down on the 9th of Av, that's when we observe Tisha B'Av, and that's what we do today. However, this year, we actually can feel it's not just that it's pushed off, it's actually a very serious significance to the 10th of Av, because this is the day that the majority of the Beis HaMikdash actually burned. So of course, this point is going to play itself out through some of the halachos, where we generally do keep Tisha B'Av on the 10th of Av, but as we'll see, there are some questions that actually are relevant to understanding, well, which one is it? Is Tisha B'Av really on the 9th of Av, but it also gets pushed off, or is Tisha B'Av not at all on the 9th of Av, it gets totally pushed off to the 10th of Av? So keep this in mind, this idea that the 10th of Av also has significance. So we'll have to understand how this works together. Okay, let's start learning some of the halachos of the 9th of Avon Shabbos. So here's the first point. The first point is there anything on Shabbos which is problematic? And this directly ties into what I just said a minute or two ago. is Tisha B'Av this year on Sunday, or is it on Shabbos and happens to be pushed off, but maybe Shabbos is still Tisha B'Av? How would that play itself out? So obviously Shabbos, we have to observe Shabbos. You can't observe Tisha B'Av with all the mourning. However, if anybody, those of you who are familiar with some of the laws of Avelos, of mourning, might remember that some of the halachas of Avelos, even though Avelos in general and in public does not apply on Shabbos, what we call Dvar Meshabit Sina, things that are in private, do apply on Shabbos. What are the examples? So here, the big example in Hilchos Tisha B'Av, which everybody, I shouldn't say everybody agrees on, it's a big machlokas, but there is more, at least in the Ashkenazi world, there's more consensus about this point than the other things we'll mention in just a minute, is having relations, okay, marital relations. That's the first question. Is that permitted on Friday night? So this is a big machlokas in the Rishonim. Different opinions about this point, and some of this may have to do, again, with what we just said. Is Tisha B'Av this year? Is it the 9th of Av, but it also gets pushed off? Or is it not the 9th of Av at all because it's Shabbos? It totally gets pushed off to the 10th of Av. So some say, well, really, this is the 9th of Av. This year, 9th of Av is on Shabbos. So therefore, private issues of mourning, such as having relations, do apply. And others say, no, it gets pushed off to Sunday. Shabbos has nothing at all to do with the restrictions of Tisha B'Av. What do we hold? So if you look at the sheet there, so in... we'll get to that in just a second. Okay. If you look at the sheet, so in source number, is it here? Source number 6. Okay, the Shulchan Aruch says, "Im chal Tisha B'Av b'Shabbos, mutar b'chulan afilu b'tashra shamita." The Shulchan Aruch of Karo says that if Tisha B'Av falls on Shabbos, you can do everything on Shabbos that you can do normally, including having relations. Okay, he says it's perfectly fine. Tisha B'Av is not on Shabbos; it's on the 10th of Av, and that's it. However, the Ramah adds in v'yesh osrim tashmash hamita. Some forbid having relations on Friday night, v'chein noagin, and that is the custom. So here, for Sfardim are generally a little bit more lenient based on the Shulchan Aruch. Ashkenazim, based on the Ramah, basically hold that having relations Friday night is not done. However, in source number 7, if you look at the Mishnah Brura, so he makes a very important point. He says, quoting the Chai Adam, that kevan devalel tefila hu mitzvas ona, since the night of going to the mikvah there's a special mitzvah of having relations, so he says yesh lismach mazeh ala matzirin. Says for that case you can be lenient and rely on those that permitted, and he says the Ramah, when the Ramah said the custom was not to do it, that was only talking about cases where there's no special mitzvah, but the night you go to the mikvah there's a special mitzvah, that is fine. And he quotes one or two other opinions there. Bottom line is that we're making all about, okay, even Ashkenazim that would refrain from generally relations Friday night would be mekil if that is the Leil Tefillah. So going to the mikvah and creates a special mitzvah, and therefore it would be permitted, and one should go about that in a normal fashion on Friday night. Okay, that's the first point. Yeah. For sure, go to the mikvah Friday night, and for sure the regular mitzvah. Correct. If Tisha B'Av, and this is not this year, but just in general, if Tisha B'Av was Leil Tefillah, then you don't go to the mikvah the night of Tisha B'Av. But because it's Shabbos, so Friday night, we paskin, if it's Leil Tefillah, then you definitely do go, despite, again, the questions we mentioned before. But because, you know, we generally, the strict halacha is that it's permitted, so even though there are Ashkenazim or Machmir, if it's Leil Tefillah, we do allow going to the mikvah, and we do say that one should perform the mitzvah of Ona as normal. Okay. A few other points to just throw in there. There are a few other things also which are included in the private category, at least in the regular Hilchos Avelos. That includes bathing, okay, rechitza, washing. Bathing doesn't just mean taking a shower or a bath. It also means, you know, washing different parts of your body. Sicha, okay, anointing, you know, putting on lotion, which again, on Shabbos usually is not done anyway, but in certain cases it might be allowed. Other cases similar to that. So there's a big machlokas about those cases as well, whether you have to be machmir for those things. And part of the question would be, let's say you have hot water, or let's say even for cold water, there's a question, can you, you know, wash your hands or feet or whatever, different parts of your body in a permitted way for Shabbos? Can you do that on Shabbos this year, if it's this week, if it's Tisha B'Av? So this is a big debate about it. Some poskim are mekil, some poskim are machmir. The bottom line is that, it depends what you ask, the bottom line for us, I think, is that the custom is generally to be lenient about these kinds of things, and only for Tashmish Shamita, only for relations, is the thing that we're generally machmir on. For these kinds of things, we're generally mekil. However, again, it's not so practical, because most of the time, you're not, I mean, in theory, you could use hot water if you use water from the dud, you know, on Shabbos, you could use hot water, but again, that's not so simple, and generally, we usually try to avoid that, if possible. So, most of the time, if you're not using hot water to bathe, for cold water, the custom is certainly to be makel for Shabbos, to use cold water to wash your hands and do other things with cold water, you know, on your body that maybe on Tisha B'Av you can't do. You can't wash your hands with cold water on Tisha B'Av unless it's for, you know, for davening, for Ntil Yadayim, or for things like that if it's dirty. But other than that, you can't do. But on Shabbos, you can do. For cold water, everybody agrees that that's okay. Again, for hot water, if it would come up, hot water is a bit of a question. Okay, one other thing, two other things in this category, and then if you have any questions, I'll take questions. What'd you say?
So hot these days,
what?
Even the cold water.
Oh yeah, I've noticed. I guess I wasn't the only one. It's crazy. I guess because it comes from the dude and it's so hot outside. So even when you try to get cold water, it comes out like lukewarm. So that's going to be, again, that's clearly from the dude. So if that happens on Shabbos, even if the water would be hot enough to be, you know, halachically a problem, it's fine because it's obviously not being heated up on Shabbos in the way that you're, again, that's not our topic now. Okay. Next point. So can you learn Torah on Shabbos? Is there a shir this week? A women's shir?
No
shir. Okay, so I guess you're... No, I didn't say it was usher. I was just... It's a question, so I wondered whether you put yourself into the question or not.
Didn't.
You didn't. Okay. So, maybe you should have. I don't know.
It's an eating
thing. What'd you say? You making food for everybody? No. Okay.
You are.
I don't make food. Maybe it's me. We're leaving on Monday, so we have no time to make food for anybody other than our own family. We're going from Monday morning to America, God willing. So yeah, we barely have time to wash our clothes after Tisha B'Av. It's going to be a challenge. Okay, was that? Yeah, we're going to bring a lot of laundry which hasn't been washed yet. Okay, so I think this one is not on the source sheet, the question of learning Torah, but just so you know that it's an issue, yeah, I don't think Rav Orlean put it on here, but basically the issue is that on Erev Tisha B'Av in general, the Ramah has a custom for normal years that you're not supposed to learn Torah on Erev Tisha B'Av. Why is that? Because Torah is something which makes us joyful, makes us happy, and Tisha B'Av is supposed to be a sad time. So just like on Tisha B'Av itself, it's forbidden to learn Torah, and that's clearly on the books, except for things which are appropriate for Tisha B'Av. Okay, learning, you know, Eicha, obviously, parts of Yirmiyahu, which are, you know, the bad parts, all sorts of other, you know, negative types of stories in Chazal and Tanakh and, you know, Holocaust stories, any of these kinds of things which are, you know, appropriate for the day are fine. Everything else is forbidden on Tisha B'Av. The Ramah says on Erev Tisha B'Av it's also not supposed to be done. Some poskim say the same thing applies this year, even though it's on Shabbos, because again, learning Torah is one of those things which is, you know, a private thing. It's not, you can learn Torah in your house, you don't have to learn Torah in public. So therefore, some poskim say that even this year on Shabbos, because it might be it's the ninth of Av, maybe you should be machmir not to learn Torah on Shabbos afternoon, and maybe even, let's say Shabbos afternoon, okay. Other poskim disagree. Other poskim say even if it was a regular year, you can learn Torah, and certainly if it's Shabbos, but there's a question to begin with that we're not really observing Tisha B'Av on Shabbos, there's room to be lenient. So if this comes up either for you or for your husbands, the general custom, probably the rest of the year, the rest of other years of Tisha B'Av, and pretty certainly this year when it's on Shabbos, is that one can be lenient. It's not a bad thing if you want to learn topics related to Tisha B'Av on Shabbos, that's a good thing. But if you have a regular learning session in Chumash or Parsha or your husband has or whatever, you know, whatever it is, halachically, there's, you know, generally speaking, there's room to be makil on Shabbos, and you can have your regular learning session. So according to that, if you wanted to have the shir, you could have, but obviously they're posting that are more stringent, so it's not a bad thing. But that's the story with Torah. We're getting there.
If you would have a surat mitzvah, and if you would have a zvar Torah, you find that.
So I'll tell you, we'll get to Surah Shkin in just a second, we'll stick that in. Okay. One other thing just for Shabbos is that there are poskim, and this is already a little bit more accepted, though not 100%, there are poskim that say that one should not take pleasure walks on Shabbos afternoon. Why is that? Because the rest of other years of Tisha B'Av, it's generally refrained on, this is also mentioned by the Ramah and others, to take a pleasure walk on the afternoon after Chatzos, after midday, on Erev Tisha B'Av. So a number of poskim mentioned in the Shaar HaTshuva and others say that this year also on Shabbos, you should not take a pleasure walk on Shabbos in the afternoon, and some of them say even in the morning on Shabbos, because again, as we said before, it's still the ninth of Av, so something which is, you know, which doesn't have to be done maybe should be avoided. And others would say, well, maybe not, this is like something public. If you know, don't take a pleasure walk, people would notice. I don't know if people would really notice. Let's say it this way, okay, if you take a pleasure walk every Shabbos afternoon, then to suddenly this week dafka not take a pleasure walk might be considered public manifestations of mourning, which maybe, you know, maybe shouldn't be done. And according to that, maybe there's room to say that it is allowed. Put it this way: it's a question whether one should take a is allowed to take a pleasure walk on Shabbos this week. If you don't normally take a pleasure walk, it's probably better to avoid it. If you always take a walk on Shabbos afternoon, then there's probably room to allow it, because otherwise that's, you know, something public which you always do, and this week you're specifically not doing it. You know, that maybe it's better to just do what you normally do. Okay, any questions so far? We have not gone to Sudash Lishi, and that's the next section. But until now. Walking to Shul is not considered to be a pleasure walk. Pleasure walk means you're going outside, the 5 o'clock walk or the 6 o'clock walk. Walking to the park to watch your kids is not considered to be a pleasure walk. It's not a pleasure walk. Certainly in my family, it's not a pleasure walk. Yeah, no, again, 5 or 6 o'clock already in the afternoon is a little bit later. Again, a pleasure walk means you're walking for the sake of having a nice walk, not because you have somewhere to go. All right, if you have anywhere to go, that's not a pleasure walk. That's a purposeful walk. Okay, any other questions about any of these topics so far? Good, okay. All right, now let's get to Suda Shlishi. What is the story with Suda Shlishi? So here, you may already know, the Shulchan Aruch is pretty clear about this, and this is in the source sheet, so if you wanted to look at it, you can look at it. In source number 3. Actually, we'll skip the Gemara. Source number 4 is the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, it's straight from the Gemara. He says, "Imchal Tisha B'Av v'Echad B'Shabbos," if Tisha B'Av falls on Sunday, "O Shechal B'Shabbos v'Nichal L'Achar Shabbos," or it falls on Shabbos and it's pushed off to Sunday, "Ochel Basar V'Shos Yayin V'Suda Mafsekas," the last meal, which for us is Suda Shlishi before the fast, you can eat meat, you can drink wine, "Umala al Shulchan Afilu Kisuda Shlomo Beis Malchuso," you can even have a lavish feast such that Shlomo HaMelech had at the time when he was king. Okay, you can put whatever you want on the table to eat at Shal Shabbos. Okay, most, you know, delicate meat, delicacy meat or chicken or this or wine, whatever you want. Okay, the only condition is what he says here: "Miut Sarach Lahafsik Mivod Yom." They add in from some of the Rishonim that you can't eat after Shkia. This you probably knew already, but again, just to reinforce that this is the same thing as a regular year. Whatever you're going to eat for your Suda Shlishi, you cannot. You must stop before Shkia. Okay, probably a few minutes before Shkia is best. Shkia, I didn't check, is probably around 7:40 or so. Anybody check? So that was it. 7:40. Okay, so 7:40 is roughly Shkia. So stop, you know, 7:35. Make sure that you're finished by around 7:35, so you don't get into trouble. Which means you may have to start Suda Shlishi a little bit earlier than normal to make sure that you're finished in time. But according to the Shulchan Aruch, there is no restrictions on the type of food that you're allowed to serve at Suda Shlishi. Now, according to that, again, you don't have to sit on the floor, you don't have to have an egg and bread like we do every other year. You can if you want, but that's not anything which is required this year. It's not, you don't have to do that. The other, you shouldn't sit on the floor, because on Shabbos, again, we don't demonstrate any public or even in your house, but anything which is clearly an act of Avelus on Shabbos, Suda Shlishi, could be in your house, it could be somewhere else. In general, that, you know, we wouldn't do that. Okay, so you should sit, you know, the regular way that you sit on Shabbos. The only possible restrictions, and this is also a bit of a debate, is what's mentioned here in the Mishnah Berurah. And this is an interesting point. If you have the sheet, so here he says in source number 5, he brings down a bit of a debate here in the Mishnah Berurah, who says in Tavkuf Nun Gimel Nun Beis Tif Katan Chaf Gimel. He says, even though after Kasav Machaber Kisudas Shlomo, even though the Shulchan Aruch wrote that you can have a big meal, Mikum Lakom Yeshiv Davo Nefesh, you should sit with a mentality of not quite mourning, but, you know, depression, I guess I would almost say. Davo Nefesh, how do you define that in modern English? You're basically depressed, your head is down, you're not so, you know, excited as you usually are. Shul Yinag B'Simcha, you shouldn't act with simcha, with a specific, you know, mentality of attitude of rejoicing at this meal. V'lo lachem l'yeshem b'sudas chaveirim, and therefore you shouldn't sit with friends. That's according to the Magen Avraham. So the Magen Avraham, his opinion, the more stringent opinion, is that you can sit with your people in your house, but you shouldn't specifically go out of your way to have Suda Shlishi with another family or with friends that are not immediately part of your regular household, your regular Suda Shlishi party, I guess. That's an important point. Second? Correct. Only Suda Shlishi here. We're not talking about the rest of it, but because this is the meal immediately before Tisha B'Av, so that's what the Magen Avraham is saying. Correct. You can make a mezuzah, and let's finish the Mishnah Berurah inside here. But then he quotes, the Mishnah Berurah quotes other opinions that disagree with that, and they say, "Demisha Rugel B'chol Shabbos," this is the Bechor Shor and others, "Demisha Rugel B'chol Shabbos Lisod Suda Zu Im Chaverav," anybody who has Suda Shlishi every single week with certain friends, Umu Da'av, or with his close, you know, close intimate friends or relatives, "Umu Ne'ev B'Shabbos Zu," and he stops this week, It's like Avelos Parhesia. It's like public demonstration of Avelos, and therefore, he says that should not that's fine. So the machlokas here is really only whether if you often have guests at Sudash Lishit or specific guests at Sudash Lishit, can you have it this week also? But he says everybody agrees. You certainly can eat with your family. That's for sure. You don't have to sit on the floor, you know, scattered around the house like we do on a regular year of Erev Tisha B'Av of Sudah Mafsekas, where one person sits here, one person sits there, one person sits there. This case, we on Shabbos, that's for sure. You don't have to do that. And probably everybody would agree that if you don't normally have guests at Sudash Lishit or you don't normally have a specific family, you probably should not specifically invite people this week. Okay, it's obviously a lowercase Sudash Lishit, even according to the more stringent opinion. And he says V'yachol Levarach B'Zimun. Okay, everybody would agree that Zimun is fine. Okay, you can have a Zimun if you have three men in your family, or if you ever do a Zimun with women, which is not tonight's topic, but if that's done, there are obviously posts that do allow that. If you do that, that's also fine. Kevin Shu Shabbos, that's perfectly fine. Okay, so that's the story with Sudash Lishit. One other point mentioned about that is in terms of Zmiros. So this, the men were asking about this a little bit. In general, the post will allow saying Zmiros at Sudash Lishit. Okay, that's fine. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about this in Igros Moshe and Chelek Dalet and Or HaChaim. That's generally permitted. However, the only question would be in line with what we mentioned before about being a little bit, you know, more low key. It could be that to sing, you know, the really fast and happy songs might not be so appropriate for a Sudash Lishit. And I certainly after Shkia, if you're still sitting at your table after Shkia, you probably should not be singing happy songs. You probably should be singing, if you're anything, slow, mournful songs which get yourself in the mood of Tisha B'Av. You know, Yishkachech Yerushalayim, any of the songs like that would probably be fine. By the way, you're also allowed to bench after Shkia. Okay, you can't eat after Shkia, but you can bench after Shkia. That's fine. Certainly when you bench at Sudash Lishit, this is a great time to have a, you know, serious kavanah for Uvnei Yerushalayim and Rachem Hashem Elokeinu Yisrael Amecha and everything there. This is really, you know, if you can't have kavanah for those aspects of benching at this meal, then, you know, you can't, you know, when can you? So, and that's something helpful to keep in mind, which I saw in one of the Sfarim here. In terms of Divrei Torah at the meal, so I saw in the Nitzei Gavriel, Rav Gavriel Zinner, a Rav in Brooklyn, he was one of these, I didn't bring it, but a good saver. He says basically, if you always have Divrei Torah to Sudash Lishit, it's permitted here also. And that would be in line with the more lenient position we mentioned before that allows you to learn Torah on Erev Tisha B'Av, and that's what I said is more or less accepted. So certainly if you always have Divrei Torah at Sudash Lishit, that's perfectly fine. Again, if you want to be in line with the mentality, it may not be a bad idea to specifically discuss issues related to Tisha B'Av or to the morning or the Beis HaMikdash, but it's not required. You don't have to do that. Okay, so far, any questions on the Sudash Lishit part? No? Everybody's good? Okay.
Can you make a bigger Sudash Lishit than you normally?
You're allowed to have, again, as we said, in terms of food, anything goes. Okay? I mean, not anything. It's got to be kosher, but but anything's fine. Anything. And it's encouraged because you want to have enough food to make sure that if you're fasting, or your husband is fasting, or your kids are fasting, then certainly there's, you know, that there's enough for everybody to feel full. Or your daughters are fasting, then there's enough to feel that you're full. That's for sure fine. The only questions we had were just about your attitude. Your mentality shouldn't be like the happy-go-lucky shalshus where you're dancing around the table and, you know, singing and bouncing your kid up and down in a very, you don't do that anyway. Okay, so we also, Sudash Lishit in general on Shabbos is often the meal where it's a little bit more, you know, serious of a time and, you know, a special time that you sing slow songs. So again, if you do the normal thing that you normally do at Sudash Lishit, this is, it'd probably be the same thing, just... Some people want to sing like the happy, you know, Yibana HaMikdash or whatever, you know, the fast version of Yibana HaMikdash. So that, you know, that kind of thing should be avoided. Okay, good so far? Let's go on. All right, a few other points related to immediately before the fast and Hachana. Okay, there's a prohibition in general on Shabbos of Hachana, but preparing on Shabbos for after Shabbos. So a couple points we could just mention that might come up here that might be helpful to know. There are some, I don't know if any of you do this, but there are some people that take this pill on before a fast called, in Israel it's called the Tzom Kal pill, that helps you have a better health, helps you have a better fast. So there's a question whether that's permitted to do on Shabbos this year. So there are many poskim that forbid this to be done this year because the one questions of Hachana and other questions might involve questions of refuah, of medicine. Again, there may be those, it's not so clear that it's forbidden because medicine is usually prohibited when it actually cures you. In this case, it's a preventative cure, which again is not so simple that's forbidden. Hachana also, you know, it's not so simple that that's a problem. The bottom line is that if you don't need it, then you shouldn't take it just because you felt like it. If you do need it, so there are posts, and this is what I saw, it's probably the best thing to do if you can, is to mix it into a drink. Okay, if you mix it into a drink, it's not so recognizable that it's that it's for a fast. And in terms of that case, again, if it's something which is important for you, then there may be some room to be made. There are others that disagree, and others that say that better to take it at night without water after the shavuot starts than to take it during the day. But I saw, I don't remember where anymore, but I saw a post that said that they thought it was permitted to mix it into your drink if you need to on Shabbos afternoon. That would be the way to get around at least some of the problems, maybe the refuah problem and maybe the hachana problem as well. If you don't eat it directly, maybe that somehow partially avoids that. Two other points, then, if you have any questions. Mouthwash, people that, let's say before a fast, would normally brush their teeth or use mouthwash. So here on Shabbos, that again may be a question of hachana. Okay, if you brush your teeth or mouthwash right before Tisha B'Av starts, that may be a problem of hachana that maybe should be avoided. Toothbrushing in general on Shabbos is a problem. Okay, though again there are those that are makil. So if you're makil on toothbrushing on Shabbos, then the only question here is hachana. For mouthwash, you might be able to get away with it. Okay, meaning mouthwash is not halachically a problem on Shabbos to use mouthwash. The only problem for mouthwash is hachana. So if you once in a while use mouthwash, not only, you know, because...
chew a piece of gum. Chew.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Also, you want to chew a piece of gum, that's probably even better idea than mouthwash. That, you know, that for sure is something which is done normally. Basically, anything that which would be done, you know, which might be done once in a while for the time right at that moment and not to be done for something in the future, you know, you could say maybe it's okay. Meaning, if you sometimes use mouthwash just because you want to use mouthwash to clean your mouth out at that moment and not necessarily because you want it to have your breath clean for 3 hours later, so there may be room to be makil in terms of that. And mouthwash is probably also not a refuah problem because mouthwash is something that normal people often use, not just people that are ill. So again, you know, if you want to avoid the problems completely, you know, maybe avoid it. If it's something which is important, then there's room at least for mouthwash and maybe for brushing teeth. There may be some room to be makil about that beforehand. If you want to get rid of the hachana problem also, what you could do is to use mouthwash not right before the fast, but a few hours before that, let's say. Okay, or even, again, I don't know how close to the point you would want it, but let's say if you did it in the morning or early afternoon, for sure, that would avoid all the problems of hachana. If you did it then, or even a little earlier, so that you can say that the purpose of the mouthwash was to have your mouth clean for a couple hours on Shabbos afternoon, you know, that might get around some of the hachana problems also, rather than doing it immediately before the fast, if that helps at all. I don't know if it really helps, but it's
an... anyway.
What did you say?
You end up eating anyway.
Right. Okay, so again, it just depends on if you would never, ever, ever use mouthwash in this way after your meal, you know, just to make your breath, you know, smell better, whatever it is, and I'm not sure. It's a little harder to be makil on that in terms of hachana. If it's something that you might do once in a while, then maybe there's room to be makil even right before. In terms of shoes, so this here, most places, we don't have a problem with this, meaning if you're in shul, let's say, for Sudash Lishita, and then for Ma'ar, there's a question whether you're allowed to bring your shoes for Tisha B'Av with you beforehand to shul. But here in Yad Vashem, even people that go to, women that go to shul, and certainly for men, we delay Ma'ariv by about 15-20 minutes, so that the beginning of the fast is while you're still at home, and we'll get to this in just a minute, but you can already prepare for going to shul after Shabbos is over, so that you don't have any problems of hachana, of let's say bringing kinos to shul before Shabbos is over, or bringing shoes to shul before Shabbos is over, etc., etc. We'll get back to that in just a minute with the rest of those rules. Okay, any other questions on the Shabbos aspects of shir? No? Okay. Surprise, usually women ask a lot more questions than the men. Okay, we'll get to the next part maybe. All right, so what happens with Ma'ariv and Motzei Shabbos in terms of Tisha B'Av? So here, I mentioned before, is that planned, that switch? we mentioned before that Ma'ariv is often delayed for a few minutes on Motzei Shabbos this year, so that you have a few minutes to get yourself prepared at home, whoever's going to shul or whatever, to prepare yourself before going to shul, get your kinos, change your shoes, and perhaps change your clothes. It's not necessarily the appropriate to be wearing Shabbos clothes when you go to shul on Tisha B'Av, so it's advisable to switch clothes before going to shul. You don't have to wear your exactly weekday clothes, but it shouldn't be like your Shabbos best. You know, when you're going to shul specifically for Tisha B'Av, is probably not so. So hold on, I was about to mention that. Okay, so this also the Shulchan Aruch mentions. It's on the sheet here, but they say also basically before you do any of your preparations, so you should say Baruch Hamad, which I guess is pretty obvious. But again, just keep that in mind before you do anything for Tisha B'Av. it's you have to say Racham Avdol in Kodesh Lachol to make sure that you're not doing, you're violating any problems of Hachana or anything else. Or certainly if you're going to do Malacha, certainly you have to say Racham Avdol in Kodesh Lachol before you do Malacha. Okay. I don't see it on the sheet here, but that's basically the story with that. We generally, again, there are some people that end Shabbos a little bit earlier. We generally end Shabbos at the regular time, okay, whatever the regular time is, 8:20 or 8:20 something, whatever, at when Shabbos is over. So that's when you would say Baruch Hamaldim and Kodesh Lachol, and then you can start preparing and changing and doing whatever you need to do. All of the restrictions of Tisha B'Av, almost all of them, the main restrictions, eating, drinking, bathing, or anointing, which we said already anyway, might apply on Shabbos, but certainly all apply at Shkia. Okay, those all apply at sunset already. You can't do those after Shkia. However, wearing leather shoes is the one exception. That does not have to be, they don't have to be removed until nighttime, until Tisa Kochavim. Okay, so even if you're not going to Shul, only when it gets to be dark, to, you know, Shabbos is over time, then you can remove your leather shoes and do what, wear whatever else you're going to wear instead. But before that time, you do not have to do that. People that go to shul that are davening Maariv, there are different opinions about whether they should take off their shoes before Baruch Hu or after Baruch Hu. Our custom, because we just mentioned we're going to shul after, you know, after nighttime anyway, so we generally put on our shoes before we go to shul. Okay, even though in the Ramah they talk about waiting till after Baruch Hu, but our custom, if we're going to shul anyway, after nighttime, so then we put on our Tisha B'Av shoes before we go to shul. Okay, good so far. All right, now Havdalah. So what's the story with Havdalah? Do we make Havdalah this year? If so, how? Who makes Havdalah? When do we make Havdalah? So this is actually, believe it or not, is a big, big, big debate in the Rishonim. What happens this year Havdalah? Maybe some say we don't make Havdalah at all. Some people say we make Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos and give a child wine to drink. Some say we do other things. There are actually four different opinions about what you're supposed to do in this situation. However, the bottom line is pretty clear. Okay, the bottom line is very, very clear in this case. That he says that, so we're 10, the Shulchan Aruch says, Leil Tisha B'Av Shechal Be'echa B'Shabbos, this year when Tisha B'Av falls out on Sunday or is pushed off to Sunday, Kishiroa Haner Omer Borei Morei Ha'esh, when you see a fire, we'll discuss this in just a minute, you say Borei Morei Ha'esh En Varchal B'Samim, you don't make a bracha on B'Samim, okay, because B'Samim is for pleasure, okay, to enjoy, and therefore Tisha B'Av is not the appropriate time to make making brachas on B'Samim. Uvaleil Motzei Tisha B'Av Ma'avdil Al Kos Ve'enom Varech, the end of Tisha B'Av, meaning Sunday night, then you make Havdalah on a cup of wine, and you don't make the bracha. Okay, lo al haner v'lo al b'sam, not on the candle and not on the b'sam. So to summarize, what this means is that again, Borei Morei Ha'esh, we're going to say Saturday night, and I'll get to the details of that in just a second. B'sam we don't say at all. The other bracha of Hamavdil, that bracha we do say Sunday night. Okay, so Sunday night is basically just Borei Pri HaGafen and Hamavdil Min Kodesh L'chol, that bracha. Okay, Hamavdil Min Kodesh L'chol, Min R'choshech, etc., etc. Okay, that's what we do in, according to the Shulchan Aruch, that's what's done this year. Okay? In terms of, just mention a few other points, in terms of, I guess, Borei Morei Ha'esh. Yeah. Sunday night. We'll get to that. Yeah, somebody does. Question is who and or what, or maybe some substitute. We'll get to that when we get to Sunday night. Okay, we'll come back to that.
You don't do Morei Ha'esh at all.
Motzei Shabbos. Motzei Shabbos, you do it. That's what he's saying. Motzei Shabbos, okay. Saturday night, you don't do B'Samim, but you do say Borei Morei Ha'esh, and that I'll discuss right Saturday now.
You don't do it.
B'Samim you don't do.
Why can't you drink the wine after Tisha?
You can.
Drink wine and
well, maybe you can. We're going to get to that. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, Saturday, the Saturday night part of Havdalah is Borei Morei Ha'esh and not B'Samim. The Sunday night part of Havdalah we'll get to later, but that's going to be some version of Hamavdil and some version of drinking something. Okay. we'll get back to that. Okay. In terms of Borei Morei Ha'esh, again, there were different opinions about this, but the bottom line is that that's what we do. The best thing to do for a number of reasons, especially here where we go to Shul, or those who go to Shul after Shabbos is over, is to say the bracha of Borei Morei Ha'esh before you go to Shul. Okay, so after Shabbos, Baruch Hamavdil Kodesh L'chol, and then either right afterwards or after you get your Tisha B'Av things ready, whatever you want, get a candle, okay? Really two candles, or your regular Havdalah candle, whatever some said, I think Saw said that maybe the regular Havdalah candle is not okay, but I think that maybe that was only in Shul, I don't remember anymore. But certainly you can do two candles, and probably you can use, at home you probably can use a regular Havdalah candle as well. I think that's specifically a problem. You basically, you know, light the candle, and you say the bracha of Borei Morei Ha'esh. There would be a question if the men are not there. There are some posts that say, maybe familiar with this in general, that women should not be making the bracha of Borei Morei Ha'esh by themselves because of questions of whether women are chayav. Again, this is a whole other discussion which we're not going to get into now. But again, you know, ideally, if it's possible, is better. That's why one of the reasons why I said before that if the men are still home before they go to shul, then you should do what you do normally. The man should say the bracha b'roi mayhayish, and the woman could say amen. If that's not possible for whatever reason, then the woman can say b'roi mayhayish according to many poskim, and that's I think what we usually follow. Okay. Correct. That's it. No hine kel yeshua si, no anything else, no avivir brachas I mentioned before. Okay. Now the only exception to that might be, and this will apply really not just Saturday night, but any day, any part of Tisha B'Av, what happens if you are planning beforehand or you find that you need to eat on Tisha B'Av? This applies either to people that are sick, okay, and this we'll discuss briefly before we finish this year, hopefully, or if you're talking about people that are nursing or expecting, which halachically will again briefly mention that you really are supposed to fast, but certainly if you're not feeling well in a serious way, you can eat. We'll come back to that at the end just briefly. So in those cases this year you can't just eat normally, okay? Before you eat you need to make havdalah. So what do? So here again the regular rule should simply be like what we said before, the rest of us would do Sunday night, you do that any other time, okay? Either Saturday night or Sunday, whatever time you would need to eat, you say the bracha of Hamal to Mikodesh L'chol, okay? There's a question for women again, because the same question about women, whether women are supposed to make havdalah or not. So again, normally we say it's better for the man to make havdalah for the woman, but the bottom line, at least for Ashkenazim, maybe not Sephardim, we can have a different halacha, but for Ashkenazim at least, women, if the man is not making havdalah, so the halacha we pass, and the women are allowed to make havdalah if they need to. So here also, if a woman needs to eat, and her husband is fasting, so the woman, we pass, and this is what the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa says, and this is actually on the source sheet, though others disagree, but this is what we generally pass in source 13. So he says here, sick person cholash tzarech levarach b'tisha b'avzeh yadil lifnei she'ochel, he's got to make havdalah before he eats. Im tzarech lechol miyad ba'erev, if he needs to eat at night, Saturday night, yadil ba'erev, he does havdalah then, and b'boker yadil b'boker, and if he eats during the day he makes havdalah anytime during the day, etc. etc. We'll skip the next line. He basically says if you wanted to you could be motzi your whole family at the same time. That's probably not going to be done, but you could do that in theory if you wanted to, so that when you make havdalah the rest of your family listens, and then you don't have to do it later at night. But I don't know if you have to do that. Could if you want. And then he says, what do you make havdalah on? Okay, the person is breaking their fast. Should they be making havdalah on wine or grape juice on Tisha B'Av itself? So he says here, v'tov yaseh lo yavdil al yayin. It's good to not make havdalah on wine. Ki'im al chamer medina. Okay, it's better to use chamer medina, which is translated as some sort of important drink. Today we generally accept chamer medina, certainly as things that you probably wouldn't be using anyway, but whiskey and scotch and beer and brandy and all those kinds of things are definitely chamer medina. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it, certainly if you need to eat because you're not feeling well, that wouldn't be the best thing to make havdalah on, don't think. Certainly if you're expecting or nursing, probably not recommended. But other drinks that are included by many poskim are soda, orange juice. Those in Israel, I would say soda and oranges are probably the best things to make havdalah on for chamer medina. There may be other poskim that say even milk might be included. There are a few other things also, maybe apple juice. So I would stick with soda and orange juice, preferably soda, I think, because in this country, soda is considered to be a chush of a drink. Okay, in America it also is, but in America it's a little, I don't know, meaning in Israel, even though yes we drink soda all the time, but I think in Israel it still has a little bit more of a significant status here than in at least where I come from in the United States. So according to many poskim, soda is a good bet, and if not soda, then orange juice is also good.
What do kids do who are in age of, you don't have to fast, but the age of
it's a good question. So if one of the parents is not making havdalah, the kids probably do not have to make havdalah on their own. Meaning, yes, generally speaking, we do have chinuch for what's it called? We do have chinuch for children, they should hear havdalah. But in this case, because of Tisha B'Av, so anyway, it's not clear, depending on what the age of the child is. But if he wouldn't have been making his own havdalah anyway, then I don't know if you have to be, more machmir here to have him make havdalah for himself to eat. I think it doesn't necessarily, it's not required. If he wants to make havdalah, then I don't think you have to tell him not to. I mean, if he wants to make havdalah and he sometimes says the havdalah himself, then it's not bad or wrong to have him make the bracha. But I think the poskim say that he's not required to do so.
Like 11-year-old girl.
Well, a girl has an additional reason that maybe girls don't make havdalah anyway. So certainly for girls, I'd say you don't have to make havdalah. But even for boys, I don't think that it's required to make havdalah if it's just the kid who's eating and not the parents. If what the Shmir Shah says here is if the parent is not fasting, then what they can do is give wine to the kid to drink, the same way we did, many of us did last week. Instead of making Havdalah on soda or orange juice, if you have a child who's, you know, over age 6, who needs to eat, so then in that case you can give them wine instead or grape juice instead to drink. That's another option other than Chamer Medina, if you like that better, if that's easier, that's fine. He says here that if you don't have another drink, if you don't have soda or orange juice by some chance, and you have wine or grape juice, then even the person himself that makes Havdalah, he can drink with wine. Okay, that's the bottom line. If you don't, for whatever reason, you finished your soda or your orange juice on Shabbos, then you would be allowed to use wine to make Havdalah or grape juice to make Havdalah if need be. Again, for somebody who can't complete the fast for Tisha B'Av. Okay, any other questions on that point?
So if there's a woman who needs to break a fast for whatever reason, and her husband is there and he's going to continue fasting,
right,
should he make Havdalah for her and she drink? Is that preferable to her making Havdalah?
I don't think it really matters. Meaning, he can make the bracha on Mimotzi her as well. There are posts in the Mitzvah that's even better. But in this case, meaning because the Havdalah is only for her, she can do it also. I mean, it's probably fine. I think either way is probably fine. And we said before, is it could be that if she's making Havdalah anyway, or he's making Havdalah anyway, that's it. They don't have to make Havdalah later that night.
Yeah,
so that's what he said before. He's good for later also. Just she has to drink though. Meaning if nobody drinks, that's no good. Okay, so if he's making Havdalah for her, she has to be able to drink the wine in order to make the bracha, you know, to be applicable for that. Okay.
And then we're allowed to do malacha and do everything.
What kind of malacha are you referring to? Okay, good. That was my next point. Okay, either you're Barasha Kivanti or Barasha Kivant. Whoever's right on the ball here and getting the issues that come up, you know, the most common issues. Got them right. Okay. Okay. What's the story with washing dishes and with Shabbos and other things like that, cleaning up from Shabbos? So, Chad Pami, that's a good suggestion. That's what we're going to do. But we also, again, because we're leaving, so it's a better suggestion anyway. We might do it all Shabbos. Chad Pami. So the first point is no cleanup until Shabbos is over. Okay, that's a general rule on Shabbos. Most of the time, you're not supposed to clean up from Shabbos until Shabbos is actually over because of Hachana questions. Okay, you're cleaning up before Shabbos is over is considered to be preparation, making the room look neat for after Shabbos. That's not okay. Putting things back in the refrigerator might be okay in general anyway, because there we generally hold that anything which is putting something back in its regular location is not included in the rule of, in the problem of Hachana. That's not throwing things out to make the table clean. That's simply saying, well, the milk or the hummus or whatever goes in the refrigerator, so I'm going to put it back where it belongs. That's generally accepted to be permitted. And on this Shabbos, this Suda Shlishit as well, that would be fine. Okay, but to clean up the rest of the stuff should wait.
Even though you want to stop eating an hour before Shabbos is out.
Right. It depends when you stop. If you stop more than, let's say, 5 minutes, before Shkia, then you're right, you might be allowed to clean up at that point because you're cleaning up for the 5 minutes that Shabbos is still going before twilight, before Ben Hashmashos. But it depends, meaning what we're probably going to do is you probably, again, we'll finish eating by that point. We might not bench right away. We'll still be at the table, we'll still be singing or whatever for a few minutes into, you know, after Shkia, before Tseis HaKochavim. So that already, we generally, would not allow it to clean up in that case. After Shabbos is over and the fast begins, so again, regular cleanup is definitely permitted. Okay, you can clean up your table so it's not dirty or whatever, that's fine. The question is washing dishes. That already takes a little bit more energy. That's considered to be more of a malacha, which takes more time, what we call malacha, which is with a shihui, okay, depending on how you wash your dishes. I guess if you have a dishwasher, that might be a little bit better. But certainly if you wash your dishes by hand, so that's a question, whether that's okay. Both in terms of doing that on Tisha, I guess, that's the main issue, doing it on Tisha B'Av itself. Meaning, on Tisha B'Av itself, you're not supposed to do malacha, which takes time, which takes effort, etc., etc. In addition to the question that you're washing dishes, you're obviously going to be getting your hands wet. And rechita is a question. Okay, you're not allowed to get your hands wet on Tisha B'Av unless it's for, you know, washing or for dirt or whatever. Second?
Wear gloves.
It's a good example. Okay, good answer. If you want to wear gloves. So then you've solved half the problem, but you haven't solved the other half of the problem. So even if you wear gloves, so then there's still a machlokas aposkim whether it's okay to wash dishes on Motzei Shabbos. It's not really the best appropriate activity for Tisha B'Av. The bottom line is that it's probably better, if possible, Okay, and if possible is the key words here. If possible, it's probably better to leave the dishes until at least after Chatzos, on Tisha B'Av afternoon. That's when we allow more things like that. I mean, those melachos are a little bit less severe in terms of their restrictions. Certainly if you want to, you know, wash dishes out so you can prepare for the meal on Sunday night, if that involves preparation by washing the dishes, that's also probably permitted. If it's difficult to wait till that point because it's making a mess or it's dirty, it smells, etc., 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 any of those cases, there's room to make it to wash the dishes most of Shabbos. Okay. My case, of course, is going to be whether it's permitted. If we don't have time to wash the dishes later and we need to leave Monday morning, we have to do a lot of other things. Is it permitted to do for that? So I don't know. I'm not sure if that is going to be enough of a reason to be make it. Well, I'll have to find ways to wash the dishes. Just use chad pami is probably the best thing. But anyways, that's a machlokas. Again, lemaisa, it's best to not do it Saturday night if possible, but if it creates difficulty, then there's room to be mekel. Okay. In terms of fasting, so this we'll come back to in a minute. In terms of fasting, what are the differences in terms of fasting on Sunday as opposed to a regular year? That we'll come back to, and that's important. I'll come back to that in a minute. Havdol and Motei Tisha B'Av. Okay. Was there a door? Okay. Did you think that she was at 8:45?
Sorry?
Did you think this year was at 8:45 or we messed up? I said we messed up because originally we wrote 8:45, but then somebody, I don't know if it was yours.
No, what time was it?
Yeah, it was at 8.
It was at 8?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Didn't I write it on the posting? I think I wrote it on the posting, but when you originally asked people, I think you had asked at 8:45.
Okay, but I don't know anything.
Right. I'm sorry.
Seriously, Mike is not here, so whatever I don't know is not going to happen.
All right, so we'll make sure that you get the recording, or you can read my notes, okay? My notes here are pretty good, so I'll give you the recording. I'll post it right now or whatever. Okay. So fasting, we'll get back to in just a minute. Havdalah on Motei Tisha B'Av. Okay, now we'll complete the topic that we have for what do you do Sunday night with making Havdalah. So again, we said, you know, clearly that hamavdil and, you know, Bore Pri HaGafen and hamavdil, that's all that you do. The only questions that could come up here, number one, what do you make havdalah on, as we said before? So here there is a bit of a debate in the poskim whether you should use wine or grape juice to make havdalah on Sunday night, or whether it's better to use what we said before, chamer medina, you know, some other, you know, nice drink, such as, again, if it's the men making it, if they wanted to do it on beer or whiskey, maybe. But again, after the fast, I don't know if people would do that. But at least soda or orange juice or something like that. Or is it better to have a child do it? Would you say? Why is what a question? Oh, so I'll tell you the question. So you look. Yeah. No, so I'll tell you. Very, very good. Look for a minute. Look for a minute at... here, source 16, if you have it. Okay? Source 16. He says that B'tish Vav le'es Erev Yitzisu Eish B'Heichal, this is the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tavkuf Nunches, 9th of Av late in the day, that's when they burned down the base of Migdash, V'nitzraf Ashkiya Sacham V'yom Asir, and it burned the entire way until sundown on the 10th of Av. U'mnekach min ha'kasher shel lechol basar v'lo shlishtos yayin v'lo asir v'yom asir. Because of that, the appropriate custom is not to eat meat or drink wine the night of the 10th, meaning on a regular year of Tisha B'Av, we don't drink wine or eat meat the night after Tisha B'Av or the next day, the 10th of Av, until we'll say the Rama says machmir chatzos hayom v'lo yoser. Some are machmir until chatzos and no more. So for Ashkenazim, we usually are machmir until chatzos on the 10th of Av, no more than that. Some Sfarad might be a little more machmir, etc., etc. Here, though, the question is, because this year it's already the 10th of Av on Sunday, is the rule different? So here the Rama writes, imchal tisha b'av b'shabas v'nidche liyom aleph. If this year happens, muter lechol basar v'yayin yom beis. It's permitted on Monday to eat meat and drink wine. Ava balayla aser, but at night, meaning Sunday night, it's forbidden because of the avelus during the day. Meaning, if we mourned and had a whole day sitting and mourning for the base of Migdash on Sunday, it's not appropriate to immediately switch into regular mode and start eating meat and drinking wine right afterwards. So that's what we generally paskin. Everybody paskins this way, that it's not appropriate to eat meat or drink wine on Sunday night. The question is havdalah, because havdalah is a mitzvah and havdalah is not immediately directly about engendering simcha. Maybe Havdalah is different. So that's the question. Okay? That's the question. So here, the Mishnah Brura and a number of other poskim say that for Havdalah, there's room to be mekil, and the husband or whoever's making Havdalah can drink wine or drink grape juice and can do it himself. Okay? Because of the fact that it's for a mitzvah. And it's already after the 10th of Av has completed. There are other poskim that are more machmir, though. The Aruch HaShulchan says it's better to use Chamer Medina. And other poskim say best to give it to a child. So here basically any of these goes. Okay, really any option is fine. There's no, depending on who you ask, there might be different approaches. Personally, There's room, you know, there's room to be to allow drinking the wine and grape juice yourself. Meaning, if the whole point is simcha, again, most of the time havdalah, unless you're, you know, a Karabakh person or a Breslau person, and havdalah is like a whole, you know, big thing, then other than that, I think that the havdalah is not considered to be a simcha, and that may not be what they had in mind. And certainly, you can rely on the Mishnah Berurah to allow wine and grape juice. But if you're uncomfortable or if you want to be machmir, there's nothing wrong with being machmir. You can give the wine to a child who's, again, above the age of six, that's fine. If you want to use Chavar Medina, that's also fine. But again, you know, I don't think you need to do that. I think there's room to Mishnah Berurah to rely on his psak. Yeah.
Sorry, can I ask a question
about
giving the wine to a child?
Yeah.
Is there a maximum age?
For this case,
for
this case, 12. For this case, 12 or 13. Okay. For last week, meaning... For some cases, it's age 9. Okay, and we'll get into all this now. But for last week, meaning for those after, let's say, during the 9 days, so a child above the age of 9 is considered to be somebody who is already an age that he should be feeling the avelus in the morning. So for some of the things, like let's say last week, it would be more machmir and say that a child above the age of 9 should not be drinking from the grape juice or the wine from Havdalah. Okay, really, it should be given to a child between 6 and 9. If you're going to, the case we mentioned before about, let's say, making, you weren't here, but making Havdalah anti-Shabbat, if you want to give the wine to a child, again, the child, you could give the wine to a child who's above 9, but if you have a child which is below 9, it's probably better for the same reason, if possible.
Give it to a girl who's between 6 and 9, than to a boy who's above 9,
let's say. Correct. In this case, though, because in this case, many posts say it's mutter l'charchila, even for the adults to drink the wine, I don't think you have to be so machmir that a child above the age of 9, if you're going to give the wine to a child, it can't be above age 9. I think any age of a child is fine in that situation if you wanted to go that approach, if you wanted to go that route. Okay. Let's say that you're really, really thirsty and your husband, for some strange reason, is not home yet. Okay, he's taking his time in shul. Is he schmoozing afterwards or he's davening? Ah, good. Okay. So the real rule, again, this is hard to do today. The real rule is that you're supposed to eat something before you do Kiddush Levana for Tisha B'Av. Not for Yom Kippur, for Tisha B'Av. The real rule is it's better to eat something first so that you have something in your stomach. But again, once you go home, it's hard to come back again. So there will be many people that will be saying Kiddush Levana in Shul. So it's dragging. You're really tired. You can't wait. What do you do? So, Vijay? Excellent, Karen, you got it. Okay, so the answer is that if you can wait for your husband, ideally it's better not to make Havdalah yourselves, because of what we said before, that women in general, l'chadchila, shouldn't make Havdalah for themselves if there's a choice. Okay, better to wait till he comes home. However, certainly drinking water is permitted, meaning whatever time the fast is over, which let's say it's the earlier time. Okay, there are different opinions about what time Tisha B'Av is finished. I don't know if you're familiar with this. All the minor fast days, including Tisha B'Av as well, there's different opinions if you wait until 20 minutes after sunset, if you wait 35 minutes or 40 minutes. If you're feeling faint or you're feeling exhausted, you follow the 20-minute approach, okay, which basically would be about 8 o'clock or so, okay, is the earlier time for finishing the fast. After 8 o'clock, if you need something, then you certainly can be lenient to drink water. Okay, that's certainly permitted, okay, because even for Havdalah the rest of the year, you're allowed to drink water before Havdalah. Did you know that? You knew that, obviously. Okay, that's halachically allowed. You're not allowed to eat anything else or drink anything else before Havdalah the rest of the year, but you're allowed to drink water. So too here, after the fast is over, you're allowed to drink water before your husband or whoever is making Havdalah has come home from shul. Some poskim even allow coffee or tea without milk. Okay, I saw that also in the Nitei Gavriel. I wouldn't recommend it l'chadchila, but certainly if you need it and water's not enough, and he's draying or whatever he's doing, then there may be room to make up for coffee and tea as well. Again, anything else other than that, it's better to wait for your husband if you can, but if you can't, if it's too difficult, then there's room to be makil, and then the wife, the woman, can make Havdalah if needed. Some poskim say maybe they can even eat without Havdalah. Personally, for most Ashkenazim, I would say the standard psak is that you can make Havdalah yourself. Okay, don't eat without Havdalah. It's better for you to make Havdalah for yourself, and then your husband will make Havdalah for himself when he comes home. Okay? Any questions about that at that point? No? We're good. Okay.
No.
I forgot already, right? It's already been half an hour. Right. Yeah, no candle. The candle was Motzei Shabbos, okay? Right. Remember the Chazar here. Saturday night we use the candle to say Borei Mar HaEsh. Okay, after you say Baruch HaMadu B'Kodesh L'Chol, we say Borei Mar HaEsh on two candles together, ideally, or something like that. You don't do it again Sunday night. Okay, even the rest of the year, if you missed Havdalah Motzei Shabbos, you can't do the Borei Mar HaEsh on Sunday. Okay, you can do HaMadu on Sunday, but you can't do Borei Mar HaEsh on Sunday. So here also, same thing.
What exactly do you do?
Baruch Hashem, Lokim Al Cholam, Borei Pri HaGafen.
Okay.
Sam'ain. I mean, not to me, but you say Sam'ain. And then you say Berachshav Lacham, Hamad, Mekodesh Lachol, Binar Lachoshech, etc., etc.
So the first card never gets
done. Correct. Okay. No, nothing else.
No,
correct. No, Bissamim. Same thing. Bissamim also. Okay, let's just review. We said this. We did this already. Let's review it again. Okay, we did this again already before, but just to make sure everybody got it straight now. Okay, we'll put everything together. Motzei Shabbos, we say Baruch Hamal Devin Kodesh Lachol. Then you get a candle with two wicks or two candles, put it together, make the bracha of Bar Mar Ha'ish. Okay, anytime Motzei Shabbos, meaning ideally you do it right away, but you can do it really anytime Saturday night. If you don't do it right away, you can do it anytime Saturday night until Sunday morning. You don't do anything else. Okay, Sunday night, you don't do Bisamim, you don't do Mor Mar Ha'ish. You do Bore Pri Hagafen and the bracha of Hamavdil, and drink the wine or whatever else you're drinking or whoever's drinking it. Okay, is that clear? Everybody's got that? Okay, again, the only exception is if you need to eat on Tisha B'Av itself, so then you need to make Havdalah before you eat, or somebody needs to make Havdalah before you eat. Okay?
What happens at Bore Mar Ha'ish and normal Shabbos if you've gone to Tampa and
you're seven? Say that again? Why can't you say... because the main reason for Bore Mar Ha'ish is that Saturday night is when Adam HaRishon discovered how to create fire. So that's a unique commemoration of Saturday night specifically and not Sunday. Okay, meaning Havdalah, the entire first part of the week is connected to Shabbos. So Havdalah, you can stay and should stay until Tuesday if you missed out for some reason. Okay, but Bar Mar Ha'ish is uniquely connected to Motzei Shabbos, and therefore that should be said only Motzei Shabbos. And Bissamim also is uniquely connected to Motzei Shabbos, transitioning into the week, and therefore Bissamim also is only Motzei Shabbos.
So you wouldn't do that.
Correct. Correct. This week and any other week that you don't make Havdalah for some reason. It's actually interesting. We're not going to go into this now, but up in the northern areas, Scandinavia and other places in Russia, where people, or maybe even in some parts of England, perhaps, where it's just too late to make Havdalah Motzei Shabbos, make Havdalah Sunday morning, so there's no Bissamim, no Bore Mar Ha'ish. Okay.
So there's no Bissamim Sunday morning.
If you did it at nighttime when it's still dark outside, you could say Bissamim Bore Mar Ha'ish. I mean, if you do it at 1 o'clock in the morning,
yeah,
where it's already the next day and it's after Chatzos, that would be fine.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you actually wait until Sunday morning when it's light outside, whatever time that might be, it could be 4 in the morning, if it's light outside, 3 in the morning, it might be light outside. I checked it, you don't know. In northern parts of England. Northern parts of England, it could be already... Yeah.
Not England, but maybe Scotland.
Okay. I think even Manchester already by 3:45 a.m. some nights of the summer, it's already, Netzach
Hama. Then you don't do the family lineup.
Correct.
So you don't do
nope. Correct. Yeah. Okay. All right. Two more points that before we finish this year. Point number one is, what are the other restrictions? Are there any other restrictions for Sunday night? Okay, we mentioned before, the Shulchan Aruch says we don't eat meat or drink wine or grape juice after the fast is over for that night. The question is, can you do laundry? Can you take haircuts? Can you do anything else? So here, same thing, okay? Correct, yes. Shower with hot water, all the things like that. So here, luckily for us, the Mishnah Berurah says in source number 17 that even though rak b'achilas basar shtiyas yayin, meaning meat and wine, is problematic, aval b'tisporas mutar l'kulei alma, getting haircuts is permitted according to everybody on Sunday night, and the same thing goes for doing laundry and for taking regular showers, etc., etc., etc. That's all fine. The only possible question might be listening to music. Okay, here I saw a little bit of a debate among the poskim in this. A little bit of debate among the poskim on this point here in the Piskei Tshuvos here, the sefer that I have here. No one's really aware. Here it is. So he quoted a bit of a machlokes about music here. He says. He quotes the Mishnah Berurah somewhere. Let me find this inside. I didn't find it inside. He quotes a number of poskim here who say that that it's problematic to listen to music on the night of Sunday night. Now, I'm not sure exactly how he got that from here. The source code is not so clear, but not so clear, but basically there are different opinions about the music, whether you can have music on Sunday night. There are some that are machmir, some that are mekil. So if it means nothing to you, meaning if you can wait, why not be machmir? It's again, why is that different than anything else? The only reason why it's no different than anything else is simply because if music gives you a lot of pleasure, a lot of simcha, the same reason that it's not appropriate to go straight into eating meat right after the fast, it's not appropriate to jump right into singing or listening to simple music, because again, your mind still should at least have internalized a little bit of the messages of Tisha B'Av. You shouldn't jump right back to normal life again. It has to be, there's some elements in your head, even if you're doing laundry and other stuff, but the simcha that you get from listening to music, maybe that night is not the most appropriate night. So if it's really hard for you, there's room to be makel because it's not a degree that's problematic. But again, it seems to be that some poskim would be more machmir. So if it's something that is easy to do, it's not a bad idea. It's certainly in the spirit of the night to finish up, you know, that concept. And again, if you really mourn for Tisha B'Av properly, I would say that you shouldn't quite be yet in the mood to do all those things. Okay, it should be something that you still, you have a little something left over in you that you should take for the rest of the year, and certainly for that night, that you still feel, you know, that something is wrong. We're missing the basic English, and I can't just jump into regular life so quickly. I need to, you know, a few hours to at least get myself back to normal to feel, yes, I got the messages of Tisha B'Av that we are mourning. There is something missing in our lives, and this I spoke a little bit about at the men's share. If you want to listen to the link, I put it on. I posted it into the groups, just about what we are missing for Tisha B'Av. What's wrong? Why is everything not perfect? Okay, and there are a lot of reasons of things that are not perfect that we have to realize. Even though we have never seen the Beis Hamikdash before, we have to realize we're missing a lot of things in terms of our direction in the world, in terms of, you know, not being still being hated by the entire world, in terms of not knowing what Hashem wants from us, and all the other problems we have in this world. There are a lot of things we still need, which we hope God will bring for us in the times of Moshiach. We don't have quite yet, and we have to realize that that's missing, and to just jump right back into regular life afterwards, you know, maybe the music is a little bit of a sign to remind ourselves that that we still want those things, and we are going to make an effort to really remember that the things are missing. Last points before we conclude. Yeah, that should be fine. That should be the same thing as anything else. Okay. Yeah, the same thing as anything else in terms of making clothing or all those kinds of things would be permitted. Okay. Last point in terms of fasting that I mentioned before, and this one we can just review quickly the regular rules. The halacha here for fasting on Sunday is a little bit more lenient when you encounter problems than it is the rest of every other year. This is mentioned in source number 15 in the Be'er Halacha, written by the Mishnah Berura, who says here, V'chein b'choli k'tzas u'mu'beras yesh mechush k'tzas mutar lecha. Based on Rabbi Akiva Eger and others, they say that somebody who's a little bit sick, choli k'tzas, and somebody who's expecting, or somebody who's nursing, who has mechush k'tzas, who's feeling unwell, okay, not a serious sickness, but they don't feel well. So in that case, it's permitted to eat on Sunday more than in other years. I mean, in other years, you basically are supposed to fast unless you are, you know, sick. That you're sick. Okay, you don't have to. It doesn't have to be life threatening. Okay, but it has to be that you're really not feeling well. Okay, it has to be basically, you know, you really, you know, either need to take Tylenol, not just because you have a little headache, but because you're sick, you have a fever, or you have to lie down, or, you know, if you're not feeling well because you're expecting, you know, and, you know, you're starting to get dizzy, any of those kinds of things. So that's, you know, that's permitted. Hold on, we'll get to that in just a second. That's permitted the rest of every other year. And this year, you don't even have to get that far. Okay, and this year, even if you're feeling, again, not just like a little bit of your head hurts, but like you're feeling, you have a headache. Or if you, again, if you're expecting and you begin to feel even a little bit dizzy, even a little bit, your stomach feels a little bit queasy, or you begin to get, you know, enough of a headache that it's bothering you, okay? This year, there's room to make ill to eat already at that point. Now, you can read, just to put that into context here, Rav Orlean, if you saw it today, he posted on the groups the same thing he posted last year. I think he didn't. He told me he didn't have a chance to change the guidelines for this year, so we'll just add it in right now based on what I told you. Did anybody see this or remember from last year? I can read a few. I mean, it's right. I have it on the computer here. You can look on the groups afterwards. Again, first point in general: if there are difficulties with the pregnancy or nursing or other medical conditions, most often don't fast. Consult doctor and rav. Okay, very very important. Always consult the doctor and the rav to check. Again, as we mentioned, the halacha is that ideally everybody is supposed to fast on Tisha B'Av. Even if you're pregnant or you're nursing or whatever else, you are supposed to fast ideally. However, again, any case which involves unique situations in terms of complications or anything else like that, in general, is going to be mutter to fast, mutter to eat, especially this year. But it should be worked out beforehand. I mean, you shouldn't just assume that it's fine. You should consult with your doctor, and, you know, probably you should get a psak from, you know, one of the rabbinic figures in town just to make sure that you didn't. Second?
Even this year?
Yeah, just to make sure it's a good idea. But again, I'm telling you, most of the time you can assume that if there are any specific issues, it probably is going to be mutter. But again, just to be sure, it's not a bad idea, just to make sure that you don't take the responsibility on yourself to eat and for whatever reason. Maybe, you know, you were mistaken, or you jumped a little too far without checking first. It's not a bad idea to check. But again, if you know that you have a serious condition, or you know that there are complications, you know, the doctor says, you know, it's probably better not to fast. And any other year you would think about, well, should I listen to the doctor, should I talk to the rav? This year, in that case, you probably don't have to ask. But if it's a case you're not sure about, you know, I would ask first, just to make sure. So again, the sheets here, he wrote, if pregnancy or nursing is normal, in principle, you are required to fast. A current post from lenient in many situations, etc. Some rule not to fast at all, and can be relied upon in cases of great need. That's not usually our psak. but there are others that say that. But here, these are great rules, great suggestions here. Ahead of time for the fast, drink a lot of fluids in days before the fast. Eat summer fruit, especially grapes, before the fast. Erev Tisha B'Av, drink some cups of water with a few teaspoons of grape sugar added, available in powder packets and baby section of supermarket. The only question is this year, because it's Shabbos, so there are questions of Hachana. Again, if it's anything that you could drink as a normal drink, okay, it's not something which is would never ever be done by a normal person, you know, on a regular day, not for a fast, you know, there's probably room to be make ill. If it's only something, like I said before, if it's only something that would only be done for before a fast, maybe it should be avoided. But this example of, you know, grape sugar or cups of water, is something which, you know, in theory could have been, you know, drunk by a normal person, there's probably room to be make ill. Leave air conditioner on comfortably, arrange help for children on Tisha B'Av, etc., etc. If you're nursing, you can express milk ahead of time to have a supply in a fridge or freezer, and daven that Hashem should give you strength, etc., etc. Okay, I've been told from my experience that, again, if you drink enough before, in terms of nursing, if you drink enough before the fast, you usually will be fine. Okay, unless you have specific issues, but in general, most people that drink enough before the fast, even if they're nursing, usually are really, really fine. Okay, I've never heard, I mean, they're sure, but my experience has been that almost everybody that drinks enough, and drinks enough doesn't mean one or two cups, it means drink a lot. Okay, drink a lot on Shabbos, even before Shabbos, and you probably should be fine. During the fast itself, again, if you're fasting, which you should be in most of those cases, at least l'chadchila, in most situations, if you know everything is normal, you should try to fast. If you begin to become dizzy, weak, faint, or dehydrated, you should eat or drink simple foods as needed. And again, this year, you don't even have to get to the point where you're not, where you're definitely dizzy or weak or faint. Even if you begin to feel unwell, without getting to the point that you're really dizzy or really weak or faint, you can already, certainly, you can already break your fast and you can eat. Just remember that you have to make havdalah first, as we mentioned before. There is no need for shiurim for Tisha B'Av according to most poskim. Okay, there are some that disagree, but the generally accepted psak is that you don't need to eat shiurim, meaning eat or drink whatever you need. Don't overdo it, obviously. Don't eat more than you need, but certainly to eat what you need is definitely permitted. Once you have broken your fast, strictly speaking, many poskim say you can basically eat normally after that. You don't have to just minimize to, tiny amounts. Many poskim say you can eat normally. There are some poskim that are a little more machmir that say that maybe you shouldn't eat more than necessary. I mean, if you can get by with one or two pieces of bread and one or two cups of water, you shouldn't necessarily eat or drink more than that. If you're pregnant or nursing, I think that you don't have to follow that. If you're a regular person, that's enough for you. There are some, the Chasam Sofer was machmir like that, even on a regular year. So if you can get away with just a little bit, there may not be a bad idea to be machmir and not eat so much more the rest of the day. But again, on the books and maker hadin, the strict halacha is probably that once you've broken your fast, you can eat or drink, as a normal person would for the rest of the day. Obviously, no candies or sweets or other things like that, but things which you need for, normal eating or drinking is probably permitted according to many poskim, if necessary. After giving birth, so again, first 7 days is perfectly, you don't have to fast. 30 days is a question. For Ashkenazim, at least, should be, wait until you don't feel well beforehand, etc., etc. Somebody who's nursing, so again, we mentioned already before, you can use bottles. If you're already giving bottles, then you give more bottles. We said before, if you're nursing full time, so we said basically, if you feel that you're in the afternoon already, you need to eat because the milk is not coming, so then you can, there certainly this year there's room to be makil, and maybe even every year there's room to be makil and start drinking, and even eating if you need. But again, as I mentioned before, if you drink enough beforehand, most of the time there's enough milk, usually it's fine. Okay, that's my experience from, many years of not just my own wife, saying from hearing from a lot of people and from other Rabbanim, my experience is that usually that if you drink enough the day before, you're usually fine. Okay, any other questions on any of these parts?
During the day, we're going to be taking care of our kids and giving them food and can I wash them fruits and vegetables? And,
okay, so that's good. I forgot to spell that out before. When I mentioned the washing dishes, I mentioned that washing dishes may not be so good because let's say if you don't use gloves, one of the problems is that you're washing your hands, okay? So washing after Tisha B'Av is not allowed unless you're washing after going to the bathroom with cases like that. If you have gloves, it's not a bad idea to use gloves. If not, any normal washing, which is done as a normal activity to prepare the food, or if you need to wash your spoons or your plates, it's mutter if you need it, okay? Meaning, it's a discussion in the post, and the bottom line is it's probably mutter if you need it. But you have to be careful, meaning you have to, don't wash it too much, don't let it run for too long. Try to make sure at least only the tips of your fingers are being touched by the water rather than the entire hand. Again, it's not always possible, but again, any case where it's being done for a purpose which is not, pleasure is, there's room to be make ill. But again, try to minimize if you can, okay? Meaning try to do it as little as possible rather than as much as possible.
Is running the dishwasher on Saturday or running the
That's probably fine.
Is okay?
That's probably fine because you're not rinsing yourself at all, and it's not a malacha which takes a lot of. Doesn't take effort on your part. Okay, you just press one button and you're finished. So I would think that that's probably not a problem to use a dishwasher if you have one. Okay. Okay, any other questions on the halacha part? Okay, so it's not a bad idea. I had some interesting ideas for Monday night for the talk about some of the hashkafa aspects of Tisha B'av, but that already we, you know, in the Shabbos afternoon shiurim, a number of speakers, including my wife, already spoke about some of the different aspects. I used some of her shiur actually in my shiur Monday night. Just one point that I saw, which if you have another minute or two, I'll just mention this. I mentioned in the men's shiur. I think it's not a bad thing. Just in terms of sinas chinam, so we all know that that in terms of sinas chinam, the Tisha B'av is a time. Did people speak about this sinas chinam at all during the? Nobody spoke about it. Okay, you may mind another 2 minutes or no? Sure. Okay. Okay. So in terms of sinas chinam, so it's just, unfortunately we know that this is one of the reasons why the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, and basically we know that this time of year is the time that we're supposed to develop a little bit more avas chinam, and there's something to be said for thinking about how we can go about developing love for every other Jew in this time of year in a way which is productive, that we really feel that we're doing something. Okay, meaning here we live in Yad Binyamin. There are others that don't live in Yad Binyamin, but we live in a pretty insulated yeshuv. There are a lot of other people, different kinds of people here, but at the end of the day, we're pretty insulated. Okay, they're not. You know, everybody's religious here. You don't find many other kinds of, you know, you find Ashkenazim and Sephardim and this and that, but you don't really find a really, you know, serious range of different kind of people. So what can we do to work on our Avas Chinam? So part of it obviously involves giving chesed just in general to people. Okay, that's certainly, you know, up there, that we already, in our Hashem, we do a lot of that already, as much as we can. But in addition to that, again, if you're working, if you ever come in contact with people from the outside, certainly, you know, something to work on, even if they're a little different than you, even if they look down on you, so you don't have to look down on them. Okay? Even if they have, you know, certain opinions about who you are, that doesn't mean that you can't love them back and express your feelings of either to them or not to them. Your feelings of Avas Yisrael. We're all Jews and we all are in the same boat. In addition to that, I found that I think that something to do with our children is a very important aspect of Avas Chinam that I think we can all work on. And that is that even if we feel that we have Avas Chinam and we really do love every Jew, even the ones that are more Haredi, more Chiloni, more this, more that, I think that, you know, for our children don't always get the message as clearly as we would think that they do. Okay, and for children, sometimes we have to go out of our way to tell them that people, you know, that kids, even the ones that are not like them, should still be respected, should still be loved. Either if that means people, or not just kids, people from other places, they shouldn't, you know, think, oh, the person looks different than us, they're weird. Okay. Or that kid goes to a different school, okay? They, you know, that's not so good. We have to really try to work with our children to develop the aspect of Avas Chinam that they can have, but sometimes we think that everything is fine and we don't realize that maybe they're not quite up to par. Even if we think we are, they're not up to par, and we have to work on them. And especially because of the fact that we live in a closed yeshuv, sometimes you have to talk about people, you know, Jews that are not religious, explain to them how we love them too. Jews that are maybe, you know, a little more, a little less Haredi, or this or that, or who knows what. They're also, you know, they look different, they might speak differently, act differently, but we're all Jewish and we love them all. Okay, and sometimes you need to explain this beforehand, before you go out and before they meet some of these people, so that it shouldn't be a problem. So I don't know if we want to do this now, but the men's thing, I actually played two minutes from the Marvelous Midos machine, where they had this thing. You guys familiar with the Marvelous Midos machine? You know what I'm talking about? There's one line of 2 minutes here, which I played for them. It was very apropos, unfortunately. And here, I'm gonna listen for a second. I'm not sure it's gonna work here, but
there goes Fivel Trivich. Do you remember him? He used to be in our school, but now he goes to Yeshivas Chachmei Kerem.
Sure, I remember him, truly. But I don't know why they call that place a yeshiva. They don't even learn any Yiddish over there.
That's right, Melech. Hey, look over there. It's that kid with the funny-looking knitted yarmulke again.
And look, Smuley, he's carrying a gemara. Why would he need a gemara?
Hey, you see that other kid down the block, Melech? He's a Kresnitzer chassid. You know, they don't even know how to speak English.
Yeah, they're really weird.
This is terrible. Those kids are making fun of anybody who's not exactly like them. Didn't they ever learn about Avas Yisroel?
Okay. You get the point. Okay, they may not be your children, but we can certainly see our children saying things like that about other kinds of people, fill in the blank, whatever it is. And it's something we could work on them with over the next couple of days to try to develop their sense of Avas Chinam. I'll end off with, if you're familiar with this poem is unfortunately very true, which might be, am I familiar with the poem about Mashiach, when Mashiach came? Another poem? All right. Have you heard this poem?
It was going around.
Okay, I'll just read it very quickly if you haven't heard it. I can put a link on. And we'll conclude with this. It was the night of the Geula, and in every single shtibel, sounds of Torah could be heard, coming from every kind of Yidl. This one in English, some in Hebrew, some in Yiddish, some saying Pshat, and some saying a Chiddush. And up in Shemayim, the Avishter decreed, the time has come for my children to be freed. Rouse the Mashiach from his heavenly birth. Have him get in his chariot and head down to earth. The Mashiach got dressed, and with a heart full of glee, went down to earth and entered the first shtibel he did see. I am the Mashiach, Hashem has heard your plea, your Geula has come, it's time to go free. They all stopped their learning, this was quite a surprise, and they look at him carefully, with piercing sharp eyes. He's not the Mashiach, said one with a grin, just look at his hat, at the pinches and brim. That's right, cried another, with a grimace and frown, whoever heard of Mashiach, with a brim that's turned down? Well, thought Mashiach, if this is the rule, I'll turn my brim up, before I go to the next shul. So he walked right on over to the next shul in town, sure to be accepted since his brim was no longer down. I'm the Mashiach, he cried, as he began to enter. But the Jews wanted to know first if he was left, right, or center. Your clothes are so black, they cried out in fright. You can't be Mashiach, you're much too far right. If you want to be Mashiach, you must be properly outfitted. So they replaced his black hat with a kippah that was knitted. Wearing his new kippah, Mashiach went out and said, no difference to me what I wear on my head. So he went to the next shul, for his mission was dear, but he was getting frustrated with the Yidden down here. I'm the Mashiach, he cried, and they all stopped to stare, and a complete eerie stillness filled up the air. You're the Mashiach? Just imagine that! Who ever heard of Mashiach without a black hat? But I do have a hat, the Mashiach then said. So he pulled it right out, and he plunked it down on his head. Then the shul started laughing, and one said, where's your cup? You can't have Mashiach with a brim that's turned up. If you want to be Mashiach and be accepted in this town, put some pinches in your hat and turn the brim down. Mashiach walked out and said, I guess my time hasn't come. I'll just return to where I came from. So he went to his chariot, but as he began to enter, all sorts of Jews appeared from the left, right, and center. Please wait, do not leave. It's all their fault, they said. And they pointed to each other and to what was on each other's head. Mashiach just looked sad and said, you don't understand. And then started up his chariot to get out of this land. Yes, it's very wonderful that you all learned Torah, but you seem to have forgotten a crucial part of our Masorah. What does he mean? What's he talking about? And they all looked bewildered, and they all began to shout. Mashiach looked back and answered, the first place to start is to shut up your mouths and open your hearts. To each of you certain Yidden seem too frum or too fry, but all Yidden are beloved, in the Abishter's eye. And on his way up he shouted, if you want me to come, try working a little harder on some Avas Chinam. Unfortunately, we're not quite there yet. It's been a problem for 2,000 years, and we still have problems today. We have to really, really work on it. And this is true, again, as I mentioned before, even if you don't receive it in return, this is my feeling, even if you don't get it from somebody else, you have to give it, and you have to express it to your kids, to yourself, to everybody else. And this Tisha B'Av, in addition to mourning the loss of things that we are missing from the Beis HaMikdash in terms of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence and everything else, we have to really try to think about what we can work on with Avas Chinam and to make this world a bit of a better place. And hopefully we should be able to celebrate, and Mashiach should come as soon as he can. We shouldn't have to fast anymore.